The Angry Chicken is a production of Amove TV. Bookmark amove.tv for more gaming and esports shows. The Angry Chicken is directly supported by listeners like you via patreon.com/TAC.
Everyone, get in here!
Ready for action!
I've got the beast in my sight.
A podcast about Hearthstone, Heroes of Warcraft. This is the Angry Chicken.
Greetings and welcome back, everyone. This is the Angry Chicken, the podcast all about Hearthstone. I am Garrett, joined as always by Jocelyn. How are you doing on this fine Wednesday evening, Joss?
I am doing pretty dang well, Garrett.
Just pretty dang?
Pretty dang.
Pretty dang. Nice,
pretty
nice.
Pretty dang.
And I'm just going to switch screens for the video for no particular reason.
It's fine.
I'm really excited to talk about that Masters bundle. Bah, 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 bah.
It's not like we've been doing this for like 350 episodes or anything, and we should maybe know what we're doing. We're like brand new to this, so yeah.
Yeah, we're very, you know, we're very new. Flip-ups happen. Jocelyn, as of, I believe of June, if anyone out there knows when the Wings of Liberty beta started, but I'm pretty sure it was June of this year, 2020, will mark my 10th year of podcasting.
Damn, dude. Congratulations.
Yep. And so, also, I just turned 1 year older. I'm feeling really old this year, Joss. I'm like, wow, yeah. I actually have been doing one thing for a decade.
Celebrating a decade of something. That's a lot.
Yeah. Kind of crazy. And obviously because of birthdays and crap, and it like being like not a particularly celebrated year that you turn, I'm thinking about my age a little bit. It's fine. I don't know about you. I like my 30s more than my 20s. I'm having a good time. But
yeah, I'm on the fence.
But
every time I get a new acre pain, I'm like, ugh.
Well, that does come.
But then I look at my bank account and my car and my house and I'm like, 30's better.
Yes, that's it. I have a lot more freedom and self-agency than I ever did in my 20s. And that part is nice. But if anything is making me actually kind of feel a little old, it's the fact that I've been doing a thing for this long. And I've been thinking about a lot because, you know, birthday hits and you start thinking about age a little bit. But we have quite a bit to talk about today. We've got a great show for you. We're going to have our Battlegrounds segment as usual, but we will be saving our Battlegrounds discussion for then, except for maybe a light allusion to it when we talk about cards, because we may be talking about a card that just got released for Standard that we've been playing with in Battlegrounds for just a while. But before we get into that, we wanted to talk about the Year of the Dragon bundle, something that I almost entirely forgot about. And you added it into the notes, Jocelyn. And I was like, oh yeah, we need to freaking talk about the Year of the Dragon bundle. This is a little insane. I feel dumb that I almost forgot it. And it's, you know, actually kind of a big deal. Normally I don't get too excited about anything that's just like added to the store, but we've never seen something sold in Hearthstone quite like this. And it's because these are custom packs.
Yeah, these are like mixed packs. So whenever we've seen these bundles in the past, it's been like, you know, 10 from the first expansion, 10 from the second, 10 from the third. But this is 25 packs and a free legendary. And the 25 packs are Year of the Dragon packs, which means each card in your pack of the five cards can be from any of the three expansions, which is really kind of cool. And this is totally anecdotally. I don't know if this actually is the rule. It could just be like hashtag Jossluck, but I did actually manage to get a legendary in my sixth pack. So it seems like these Year of the Dragon packs will actually reward you the same way it would if you were opening like 10 packs of a new expansion or something, because they have that like bad luck protection, but they have, you know, all new packs have, you know, first 10 that you open, you get a legendary, and then it's, you know, one in 40 packs or better from then on. So It's, I mean, a pretty good deal because you're guaranteed the legendary just for buying the bundle. And then it seems like you're probably also guaranteed a legendary in the first 10 of those 25 packs. So I think it's a really good deal. It's $20 for you guys down in the States. It was $25 for me up in Canada because, you know, exchange rates. But yeah, it's pretty cool because it also funds the Hearthstone Masters Tour. So this is the new esports bundle for this year, basically.
Yeah, yeah. And that being said, like this is all awesome, but let's go into the butt town. Let's go into butt town, Jocelyn. Because but that the amount that can be contributed is once again capped.
Yes.
They are capping how much could potentially be contributed to, granted, a lot of money, $1.5 million.
Which I feel like is double last year's. If I remember correctly, it was $750,000 last year was the cap. I could be remembering that wrong, but $750,000 stuck in my head.
That does sound correct as well. I did a quick some quick digging and I couldn't find the old post from 2019. But yeah,
this still does seem more. This does seem higher, though. Although I will also say, I think last year there were less Masters Tour events. Again, if I remember correctly, this year there's actually 6 Masters Tour events. So the 150,000, the 1.5 million is going to be split between the 6 different Masters Tour events. So we've got our first one. Is actually coming up this weekend in Arlington. And so this bundle will go to fund Arlington. It has a base prize pool of $250,000. This dragon bundle is going to go towards that, even though it's going to be available through February 11th. And obviously Arlington finishes on Sunday, but any money, you know, raised by this bundle will also go towards the prize pool in Arlington.
Yeah. I want to see them just get rid of the max that can be contributed. And hell, don't even like, just, I don't know, just let it keep going.
Yeah. And I feel like we talked about this last year too, but I definitely fall into that category too of wishing that they would just remove the cap because they've already got one kind of cap built in anyways, because you can only buy this once per account. It's giftable. So like I could buy, you know, 10 of them and give them out on the stream or something. And that's okay. You can do that from your account. But in terms of actually being able to buy them for yourselves, it's already capped, right? So I'm kind of like, I'm on the fence about this because it feels like they're, you know, slowing down the contributions twice over, right? They're capping the actual money it can raise, and then they're also capping the amount that you can purchase on your account. And if I remember correctly, again, like I wish I'd looked this up before the show, but I feel like it was like 100% of the revenue last time went towards the cap, wasn't it? Because yeah, they very specifically said this time 50% of the revenue goes into the esports, the Masters Tour prize pool. But last time I thought it was 100%.
Without having that in front of me, I'd rather not comment on it.
Yeah, okay. I couldn't remember if which way it went, but I had it in my head that it was 750 and it was 100% of the revenue because we hit the cap really quickly last time, and I'm sure that combined with more Masters Tour stops is probably why the cap has been raised. But yeah, who knows?
Yeah. I mean, still a sizable amount of money. I would just like to see something along the long lines of the international. Like we're like, I'd love Hearthstone to make like headlines because we just blew expectations out of the damn water regarding price pools. But I don't know, maybe baby steps.
Well, they did something kind of like that, right? With the global games, not last year, but the year before.
I'm sorry,
it's not this year, but the year before, the global
the
global
esports games that everyone watches. Yes. The really popular Hearthstone esports that everyone just loves.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. That one.
Just making sure the premier Hearthstone tournament. Oh, it's not Grandmasters? Then who cares?
What I was going to say is that with the Cheers thing that they did on Twitch, about a year and a half ago now. I mean, it was ridiculous because Team USA got like 13 million cheers and then the next closest was like 1 million cheers. So it was very,
USA, like US. USA.
Yeah, it was very US biased.
I'm gonna smack talk HGG, and then I'm also gonna chant.
Yeah, you're gonna cheer for America because that's what Americans do. Yeah, I get it.
I prefer this because my old, not hip, and with it or understanding cheers in Twitch is much better at this. Although I probably won't need to understand it that much longer since Hearthstone Esports is now exclusively broadcasted on YouTube streaming.
Yeah, and I don't know about you, Garrett, but I mean, most of the time, I had been paying pretty close attention to Hearthstone Esports in previous years, but I've definitely fallen off, and we had a bit of a gap, you know, from the World Championship at BlizzCon to now Arlington at the end of January. Like, we went all of most of November, all of December, and almost all of January with like no major real Hearthstone Esports to speak of. So I kind of fell off a little bit. And still, the number one place that I used to find and watch Hearthstone Esports, whether it was, you know, Grandmasters or the Master Tour or whatever, was because I was already on Twitch. Like, I'd be, you know, Saturday morning with my cereal and my coffee laying on the couch, and my first thing I do is, you know, go and hit the button and see what's going on Twitch. And Hearthstone isn't going to be there anymore. And that's kind of sad because I don't think I'll watch YouTube gaming. Like, I don't spend time on YouTube at all. So you, Garrett, are much, much more in the YouTube like space. Like, we've talked off air before about how you're not even really, you know, consuming that many podcasts anymore. You're watching a whole bunch of YouTube videos. So, like, you're very much in the YouTube space. So do you think it might actually increase the amount that you're watching Hearthstone? Cause it'll just be like, I'm assuming like popping up and being like, hey, I'm here.
Yeah, actually. I watch a good amount of live content on YouTube. I would like to get personal for a moment since you made it personal, Jocelyn, by sharing my personal off-air thoughts with I'm giving you a hard time.
Oh, I was like, I'm sorry.
This is totally okay.
Using YouTube was like super close to your heart and, you know, personal. And I'm sorry. I didn't mean to out you as a YouTube watcher.
Yeah, no, I mean, in my personal life, like, I just spend a lot of time editing like video stuff now. I've started taking on a lot more videography freelance, and that means I can't listen to podcasts. Back when I was doing mostly graphic design freelance, that is a silent project. You sit there in silence and you make art. When you do a video, you have to listen for things so you can make your cuts on time. And so because of that, I am now watching a lot of YouTube in my evenings when I'm done working. And listening to very few podcasts. I do miss them, but they just don't fit into my workflow anymore like they used to. So yeah, I consume an absolute ton of YouTube content. I don't watch that much live. I pretty much only watch Drift Racing live because they don't broadcast it anywhere else.
I legit had no idea YouTube gaming was still a thing. I had thought that they took it out back and, you know, Old Yellered it. Was it Old Yeller? I can't remember. Anyways, there's some real sad movie that I've never seen. Yeah, I thought they did that to the gaming section of YouTube, but maybe not.
I mean, I thought I didn't even know Facebook gaming was a thing, and then they took Disguise Toast. So
yeah,
I love saying they took, like, they came in with a, it wouldn't be a black bag, it would be a blue bag with a white logo on it.
And, yeah, full of money, stole them away,
and then threw it over a toast shaped head and drug that person to YouTube to stream. But yeah, I mean, like, personally, not going to affect me that much. I watched most of last year's Hearthstone Esports on VOD after the fact in the morning with my coffee on YouTube. I mean, we're seeing a lot of different platforms with a lot of money to throw around vying, like taking the fight to Twitch. I mean, it honestly reminds me a little bit of like the console wars growing up. Cause like, I remember like I had just missed the Atari kind of phase. Like, but my first console was a Nintendo Entertainment System. And I realized there were competitors at the time, but it really felt like that was kind of it. But then when the Super Nintendo came out, it was like Super Nintendo versus Sega Genesis. And, this reminds me weirdly of that. Like, now you've got Mixer, now you've got Facebook, now you've got YouTube, and they're not just launching their platforms and hoping that they come. They're not just sticking to the old build it and they will come. No, build it and throw money at them and they will come. I obviously don't know the details of this deal. But
yeah, they talked a little bit about how Blizzard was getting some of the like cloud tech that Google offers. And now whether that's for actually like serving their games to clients or if that's just for, you know, like saves and things like that, or if those are actually going to be like the servers we play on, I don't know. They didn't go into crazy detail, and I've got to assume that there's probably some money piled on top of those servers. But yeah, I don't know. I was really confused because, I mean, I guess Amazon is just not like Twitch is such a small part of Amazon and what they're doing. Like, I guess they're just not that concerned. Like, Twitch still is the top of the video game streaming platforms. So YouTube obviously flexes a lot of muscle in the, you know, like uploads and watch it later. But when it comes to YouTube Live, they don't hold a candle to Twitch. So maybe I think Amazon's maybe just like resting on their laurels a little bit, and they should maybe be trying to make these exclusivity deals. Now, we've seen them make exclusivity deals before with like smaller parts of Blizzard, but this is all of Activision Blizzard. So this is like all the Call of Duty stuff. This is Overwatch League, like everything. And I feel like maybe Amazon should start paying attention to stuff like this, because I feel like this is a bit more of a big deal than, you know, individual streamers. As big as those individual streamers are, I think that there's a lot of people trying to make a lot of money on esports, and there's a lot of investment in that space. So being partners is probably something you want to do from a like company perspective, I would think.
Yeah, I'm sure.
I mean, Amazon has all the same server tech, right? So
yeah, and also Blizzard has taken a bit of a step back in esports.
Yeah,
in basic, in most of their avenues outside of Overwatch League. So who knows? I mean, there's all kinds of places to, I think, speculate why they did it. I'm sure some of it was some sort of stability, maybe taking certain things off their plate, and I'm sure a whole lot of it had to do with money in some way, shape, or form.
Yeah, yeah. Everything is money when you come down to it, whether it's actually like dollars changing hands or services changing hands. Like, yeah, all of it is, you know, both sides trying to get the best deal they possibly can, right?
Yeah, and there's so much speculation and so many opinions, and I think interesting debates about, like, at least around major streamers leaving and people being like just doing, comparing numbers to numbers, and you are seeing like the major streamers, when they leave Twitch, their numbers do go down, but it's like, yeah, but they're probably getting a much larger portion of ad revenue. They probably got paid up front. Like, there's a lot of other ways where that's just more worth their time now.
Yeah.
And however many viewers fell off, it's probably still worth it for them.
Oh, so. Yeah, 100%. Like, all of those big deals are very much like, I mean, if you move and even take like 50% of your audience, it just basically these deals are rumored. I don't think anyone has actually come out and said how much money they've been paid to move platforms, but these deals are in the like multi-millions of dollars. So it's like, man, if you were a content creator and just all of a sudden didn't have to worry about making money anymore and you could just focus on the content, I mean, the size of your audience stops mattering and you can just focus on having fun and making good content and not worry about the dollars anymore. Like, the amount of stress that takes off your plate, it's crazy.
The range for Ninja via GameSpot was between 20 and 30 million, FYI.
Yeah, exactly. Like
gross. Like, good for him, man.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, 100%.
That's like insane.
And I don't even know, like, I haven't watched anyone on a different streaming platform. Like, I'm definitely one of those people who stuck to Twitch, and not because they are, you know, particularly amazing, or I think that their, you know, communities or policies or anything else are better than anything else out there in terms of Mixer or Facebook or YouTube or whatever. It's just that, like, I'm literally lazy AF. And I'm like, I'm here, I exist here, I have the apps on all of my devices. You know, I'm just lazy.
Funny enough, that's the main reason I started watching live things on YouTube, is because I have Rokus in all of my rooms and they don't have an official Twitch app for Roku for some reason. So I just started spending a little more time on YouTube. So like last year on E3, I watched it on YouTube instead of Twitch, and it has snowballed. I am weirdly watching more. But again, that's more of like me being an old man. And it's like, I have a Chromecast. I could sling my phone to my television, but the Roku has a built-in remote and I don't need to touch my phone and look at Twitter and see someone calling me a jerk for some dumb thing I said on a podcast last night.
See, yeah. And like we have a Chromecast. It's like what we default to. And even though we do have like apps built into our TV for like Twitch and a whole bunch of videos, like most of the time, I'm just, again, too lazy to pick up a remote. I have my phone in my hand anyway. So I just Chromecast whatever I want from my phone and it's easy. But yeah, yeah, I don't have a YouTube gaming app on my phone. Is there even a YouTube gaming app?
There's just a YouTube app, Josh. You can watch whatever the hell you want on it. If it's on YouTube, it's on the YouTube app.
I didn't know that. Yeah, this is how little time I spend in YouTube. YouTube has never been my
I'm going to sound like such a YouTube shill. Like I don't have a pony in this race. Okay. We barely get 1,000 views on YouTube. Our audience is on the podcast, but yeah, it's actually really nice. Like if you're searching for a thing and there's a relevant big live event, it shows up with the on-demand videos like normal ass YouTube. It's
today I learned
surprisingly well put together. I really enjoy it. But anyway, this is a long way around to say we're going to be watching our Hearthstone on YouTube from now on, and not just because it's the VOD after the fact, and it's me in my pajamas with my chihuahuas and my coffee in the morning. Really wanted to paint a picture for everybody.
Yeah, that was great.
I had to throw pajamas because I would just assume everyone thought I ran around without them. So
yeah,
you're welcome, everybody. Your mind's eye is welcome. And then we have Arlington. It's, speaking of which, and where we'll be watching it, it is this weekend. Mm-hmm. And we know basically nothing about Grandmasters this year. So this is a little odd.
Yeah, I wanted to have a conversation. They put some of the Grandmaster, or they put the official Grandmasters rules out, I believe, yesterday. And thank you to person on Twitter who tagged me in Boar Control's post, I think, of the rules like that. Thanks for pointing that out. I definitely missed it. They did put the rule book out, but they haven't put a post up with the official Grandmasters. And I don't know why, but it's like there's some really big question marks with who actually is a Grandmaster this year. Like, we're pretty sure that we know most of them, but we also know like Amnesiac quit. And I believe that Blitzchung's ban is going to be done soon. I don't think he can compete in Arlington, but I think it should be kind of over relatively quickly, definitely before April when season three starts. So I do expect him to be playing in season three, but like, I don't know. I have questions. Blizzard, why, when you have a Masters Tour event coming up, do you not have your list of season three Grandmasters? It just seems... Yeah, I don't know.
I think we just need to make peace with this. I feel like every year we kind of have this conversation of, seems a little late to not have hard details about Hearthstone Esports this year. And now I would be surprised if we already had details, frankly. It's just kind of part of the course. And last year I just assumed it was because they were switching to Grandmasters. It was a new thing. They had to invite people because they didn't have, not everyone was just brought in via actually qualifying for it, which is its own big debacle and yada, yada, yada. And they're going to have to figure something out again this year, like you said, because there's some gray area as to who even is a Grandmaster. I hadn't even honestly thought about it yet. You know, I'm honest, like, and this isn't me like doing a bit or being grumbly. Like I was watching Firebat stream the other day. I'm actually watching a decent amount of Hearthstone streamers, for the first time really ever, like since like beta, because I want to learn more about Battlegrounds. And it's someone like in his chat was just like, "Hey, you gonna play any standard?" And he's like, "Yeah, I'm gonna play it later today. Also, I'm a Grandmaster. I'm gonna be playing quite a bit of it very soon."
Yeah.
Oh, I think he also said he was going to Arlington. So,
Arlington, so Texas, for whoever was asking, because I guess you guys have lots of Arlingtons in the States. So it's Arlington, Texas. And there's 360 players that are qualified. So we assume that includes a lot of Grandmasters, but I don't know how many are actually going to go. There's actually been a couple of Grandmasters who have declined their invitations because of the coronavirus, which we were, you know, talking about and riffing on a little bit in pre-show. But it's actually a serious like travel concern. So there's some of the Chinese players, and actually I think Lion as well, like our reigning world champion, will not be traveling to the Masters Tour in Arlington. So
yeah, I think
I want to say it was Psycho also was another one that's not traveling. maybe.
Yeah, and I believe it was just visa issues, but Raven won't be there, sadly.
Oh, man.
Yeah, I saw him tweet today that he was having visa issues and sadly will not be there, which just stinks. I legitimately like Raven as a caster, and not just because he comes on the show and is nice to us.
Yeah, I like him as a caster and a person. But there's been some people backing out already. And like I said, we don't have the Grandmasters list yet. And it seems odd that we're, you know, at the point of our first tournament of 2020. And yeah, I don't know. I feel disjointed and I have questions and I don't have answers. And
at the end of the day, I would like to put the same advice out to you and I as we put to a listener, I believe just last week, which is it's okay if you're not completely up to date on everything going on in Hearthstone Esports. Because you can just watch it and it's entertaining. And I know. That's what I'll be doing with Arlington. I agree with you. But I'm also totally ready for some proper competitive Hearthstone.
Yeah, I'm excited to see what the players are actually going to put out there. So it's best of five Conquest of the Band. So not Shielded Conquest, which is kind of unfortunate because I was really enjoying watching that format. But, you know, Conquest of the Band is what it is. But what's really interesting is that qualified players are actually able to change their decks basically up until the moment that the event starts. And they've done this because the new cards only just released. So normally deck lists have to be submitted and verified and everything else, like usually about 24 hours before the event, sometimes a little bit longer, depending on who's the organizer and everything else. But this time there's 19 new cards. So the whole set hasn't released yet, obviously, from the single player Galakrond's Awakening. We're going to talk about the new stuff coming up in a segment in a couple minutes. But there's 19 of the cards of the 35 total that are going to be available to be played in Arlington. So they're letting players just play like and change up their decks right up until the moment that the tournament starts. So this is a kind of really cool and interesting thing that they're doing. I don't think that they've ever done something like this before. Like they're usually they've done like nerfs sometimes within a week of an event, but letting decks be changed and introducing a new card pool like this is kind of unprecedented.
Yeah, I think it would really hurt viewership if they didn't. Because I want to see them play with the new cards. You know, even though there's not that many new cards that have just kicked the door down and invented new archetypes or made archetypes that weren't good now. But you know, at the end,
I would have expected them to like release the whole like 35 cards a couple weeks earlier sort of thing. Like
yes,
start it in December, have everything out by now, let the meta settle for a week or two and then have the first Masters Tour. Like that would be what I would think like 2017 Hearthstone would do, but we're in like post 2019 Hearthstone now. We're just throwing all the rules out the window.
Yeah. I would rather them watch. To me, this is another one of those things because people, I don't know. One of the things around Blizzard is obviously tinfoil hat theories, right? And a lot of folks, I think there's always debates and theories about when things come out and why they come out when they do. And this is just another one of those where I'm like, y'all, stuff comes out from Blizzard when it's freaking ready. it takes a lot of coordination to make an event like this happen, to find a venue, to coordinate it and do everything that needs to be done. And obviously it also takes a lot to make an addition to a card game that's also a video game and get it out the door. And so I think that's what we're running into right now. Like this is when they could make Arlington happen. And this is when they
the day for Arlington has been set for quite a while. Like before BlizzCon, we knew the date. I feel like even with Blitzchung's ban, which happened at the beginning of October, we knew the date of Arlington at that time. So Arlington's been in the books for quite a while.
Sorry, I'm just Googling in the background real quick release dates of expansions because I feel like Descent of Dragons was kind of late compared to previous years. And of course,
I feel like you're right, but I feel like that also might just be a feeling. I'm feeling all the feelings about when that release date came out because I feel like I was excited because it was yay dragons. So
Descent of Dragons was December 10th. Rossicon's Rumble was December 4th, a full week earlier. And the year before that, December 10th for Kobolds and Catacombs. Okay, so that's closer to Descent of Dragons. You know what? Okay, and then Mean Streets of Gadgets in December 1st. So we've got earlier, about the same time, earlier, and then Descent of Dragons. Okay, never mind. I've just been playing this game too long because I was thinking of League of Explorers, which was launched like 5 days after BlizzCon when they announced it.
Yeah.
Because I was on my honeymoon and like, sorry, everybody, I'm going to just wear this lei and go to Allura. Because that's what I did.
Smart.
Oh, damn. We just got raided by Regis. Thank you, Regis.
We did. Regis.
Come back on the show next time you're bored. Yeah. Thanks for that, man. That's awesome. But yeah, it's got to be when it's ready kind of thing.
It's going to make for some super exciting conquest to watch this weekend. So I want to see what people are bringing. I mean, I'm sure I'm going to talk about it in a minute, but I'm sure we're going to see some embiggening of some druids.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, anyways, before we get into talking about what cards were released into a standard, I won't say standard, but also wild and cards were released all in the Hearthstone this week. Let's we have some patrons to thank. Those are the fine people that make this show possible by supporting us over at patreon.com/TAC. If you like this podcast, you want to keep it coming at you and support Jocelyn and I in the process. We really appreciate it. Thank you very much. We give you some perks too. You get access to the Patreon only Discord, an ad-free feed, some other fine things. So go check it out. patreon.com/TAC. This week we want to thank @BasePie. Just went ahead and gave us their Twitter handle. Thank you, Base Pie. Yep. Not to be confused with the Rational Pie, although you two should be very good friends. You both have a very deep love for the number 3.14. That's as far as I can go.
It's either that they're going to be like super best friends or like mortal enemies. I don't think that this can go any other way.
Yeah. Yeah. Also, thank you to Andrew Turner and Thomas Perry. So thank you very much. We got quite a few new patrons last week, and we thank you in the order that you signed up. So we have not actually thanked everyone that signed up since last week, but we're going to stop it there for today. So thank you very much. And speaking of that ad-free feed, we do have a sponsor for today, and we would like to thank them before we move into this week's news. And they are MeUndies. It's like a brand. They make underwear. I'm not talking about my actual underwear, although I am in a way because I am wearing MeUndies. You should go check them out over at MeUndies.com/TAC to get 15% off your first pair. Jocelyn, I know it's a made-up holiday, but Valentine's is like right around the corner. And
it's a made up. Well, I like Valentine's Day. I like all holidays, though. But yeah, the thing that makes all holidays better.
It is
all of the amazing prints at MeUndies. They have something for everything.
It's a really easy holiday to like poke fun at, make fun of. And I enjoy taking part in that. But I also like taking part in Valentine's. You know, I do like being a little mushy when it rolls around, taking Katie out for like a nice dinner, doing something nice, you know, going a little bit more out of my way that day. And also, thanks to MeUndies, y'all can get matching underwear for you and your loved ones. I mean, like, you can match. And it's okay, because, you know, no significant other. They also have buddy bands, bandanas for your animals. So you can hang out in your underpants with like me and my chihuahua. We can hang, having matching underwear and bandanas, or my loungewear, you know, if I'd want to be less weird about it. But
you should always aim to be less weird about your undies. Listen, Garrett.
They're super freaking comfortable. I really like the loungewear. I live in my MeUndies. I call them pajama pants as much as humanly possible. They really are like the softest fabric I've ever had on my body. Highly recommend them. Go check them out. Get 15% off your first pair, free shipping, and a 100% satisfaction guarantee when you go to MeUndies.com/TAC. That is MeUndies.com/TAC. I just got tacos and hot sauce with hearts. That's one of their fun Valentine's prints. You should go check it out. And now, let's get into this week's Hearthstone news.
Good news, everyone!
So we've got more cards, Jocelyn, not quite as many as last week, but I'm personally, as the host of a weekly Hearthstone podcast, I'm happy about that because it's easier to fit them all into an overlay and also makes for a slightly more sane runtime. So let's do it in the order we've been doing it, which is class order, starting with Druid and Rising Winds, a 2-mana common Druid spell. It's twin spell that reads, choose one, draw a card, or summon a 3/2 eagle. So, like, gut reaction to the card at face value is, well, I guess Twin Spell is worth something because 2 mana draw a 1 card and 2 mana for a 3/2 for a 3/2 beast. It does have a beast tag, so there's a little bit of tribal there if you're interested. That's not that great. It's not the most powerful use of your 2 mana.
But it is a choose one and also a twin spell, which I think both of those are definitely worth something in Druid. I mean, twin spell, when we first started seeing these cards, we were kind of like, eh, but they've proven to be much, much more powerful than we realized because you get that second copy in your hand, right? So,
yes. Yeah. The flex is totally worth something.
Yeah.
And you do, as you say, you have multiple copies, so that is all worth something. And it's Druid. There are choose one synergies, and Quest Druid isn't going away. And as a matter of fact, last week you and I both went hunting. We like went hunting. We're like, who's using any of these new cards? And it was really hard to find decks like 24 hours into it coming out on a website like HS Replay. You know, they have minimum game requirements for a deck to even like show up on their website.
I think it's like 10 different pilots and 400 games played. So
yes, something along those. I believe that's exactly it. As a matter of fact, because we were talking to HS Replay today about some of this stuff. But Equestria did pop up when I was looking around for this. Not a ton of games played, very low as a matter of fact. But this is finding its way into a Equestria, which makes total sense to me. Because if you're getting both of these effects, it's pretty solid. I mean, yeah, granted a 3/2 a little bit later in the game when you've actually completed your quest. Not the best thing in the world, but a 3/2 that draws you a card, I would play that for 2 mana at most stages of the game. And
yeah, and a 3/2 isn't terrible, right? I mean, there's a few decks that are, you know, embiggen, of course, playing like fairy dragons and stuff. And those are 3/2s. And obviously, this doesn't have the untargetable effect to it, but I think just the having the 3 attack, like, I don't know about you guys, but I have seen a lot of Galakrond Zoo type decks if I'm not being beaten in my face by a super aggressive hunter. So I think that, you know, having that 3 attack with the 2 health, it's not terrible in a 2 drop. I mean, you know, you can take out some of those void walkers and stuff and still have your 3/1 surviving and there's dead and you want to clear off as much as you can. So I think it kind of depends on what exactly you're doing and what you're facing. But I don't think this is bad. I think this is pretty good. The you know, guaranteeing yourself some 3/2s. If you have an aggressive kind of matchup, it's not bad.
I
like Quest Druid, man. I really like that deck.
I do, too. I'm a big fan. I completely agree. 3/2/2, maybe not the most exciting thing in the world, but some games it's good enough. You know, it can get you there. And sometimes you just really need to draw a card.
Yeah.
Because things are getting out of hand. I don't absolutely hate this card, but it's also not one that I just lose my mind over. I think it's like, right. It's like the poster child for fine.
It's fair. Fine. we chose different F words. I'm sorry, Garrett.
We chose different F words.
Yeah.
Nice. I was on my bad camera for the video audience. I'm switching. Mage is up next with Arcane Amplifier. It's a 3 mana, 2/5 common mage elemental that reads your hero power deals 2 extra damage. So basically getting a 3 mana ping or a 3 damage ping every time if this is alive and on board. I want to get so excited about this card. I love adding damage to the mage ping. I love it so freaking much, Jocelyn. Even though mage is like one of my least played classes, I get weirdly excited about adding damage to the mage ping because I still remember the first time I ever logged into Hearthstone using that damn hero power and going, wait a minute, you mean to tell me that this is a card game? And if I play mage every turn of every game I ever play of Hearthstone, I am guaranteed to put 1 damage wherever I want it. That's insane because I was, you know, playing Magic at the time. And I'm like, wait, this isn't a card that I have to draw. And then it's just there. Like hero powers was blowing my mind. And specifically the mage hero power was blowing my mind. And you remember like in the early days last year of Rossicon's Rumble, I was all about the Janalai deck. I love the Janalai deck. However, I don't think this is enough to bring it back. I don't. I mean, it's cool that it's a 2/5 for 3. Like those are good stats for what you're paying for. But you don't really want to drop this on 3. You want to drop this on 5 or later. You want to have mana to also hero power alongside this. So I don't know. This isn't getting me that stoked as much as I would like to. Like, this is the kind of car where I go, like, my gut says I like this. I like this card a lot. I love this design. I love these types of effects in Mage, but I don't think this card works in practice.
Man, that bums me out so much. Cause I mean, yeah, Janalai decks, so fun. I like hero power centric decks. I just think they're really fun to play. And, you know, summoning Rag when that was a thing that you, well, I guess it technically is still a thing, but nobody's doing it. But yeah, I want to do this. I want to make this work. I want to find hero power Mage and make this a thing. And I think if you can make it work, then this fits in, but I don't know if it does, but yeah. Janalai decks are fun.
I'd really like it to be an elemental, like, Janalai deck, because Rag is an elemental, and it just, like, let's keep it going. Let's really run home with the theme. Yeah, Mage
has a lot of elemental type synergies, even with some of the newer cards that they've gotten in the last couple sets. So it's probably doable. And Zobot in the chat room is talking about maybe an odd Janalai elemental Mage. So maybe there's something in the Highlander realm. Maybe there's something over in Wild with the even and odd decks, specifically the odd decks. I mean, there could be something there, maybe.
Yeah.
I want to see it work.
I hope so. I do too, because this is one of those cards that I really like. I just don't believe in it.
Oh, you don't believe in the heart of the cards, Garrett.
Listen, so I really sad. Like Santa, Jocelyn. Fill in the blank. In case kids are listening. Cleric of the Scales, as we move in the priest, is a 1-mana, 1/1 rare priest minion with a battle cry that reads, if you're holding a dragon, discover a spell from your deck. This is not a copy. This is the actual spell from your deck, and it takes it from your deck. So the kind of a downside-upside thing, like the downside is you're not getting a third or a fourth copy of spells, potentially, if you actually play a game where you draw all of those. Upside, though, you know, thins your deck, and it's freaking targeted draw, which I like.
It's super targeted draw, too, because you get to discover the spell from your deck. So it doesn't just say if you're holding a dragon, draw a spell from your deck. You get to choose what works best in that particular situation. So, I mean, you know, there's a really good chance you're going to get exactly what you need because you have that built-in discover too. And I really want to see this work because I really liked Dragon Priest. I think it's a fun deck to play, except it really is just not the way Priest is playing right now at all. And I want to see them. I want to see a Dragon Priest work because I want them to be doing like super cool dragon things because it's the year of the freaking dragon. Like, you know, rezzing stuff is cool, but that's like so 2018. Like, come on, move on, priests.
Could you have Valley Girled that up a little bit more? I feel like you weren't quite.
I'm sorry. That is so like 2018. Like, come on, priest, just get with it. And like, come on, stop rezzing. Just do dragons. And like, let's be like fiery and hot. Okay.
So hot.
Wonderful. Exactly what I was hoping for. Thank you, Jocelyn.
You're welcome. You're so welcome.
So much. Yeah, I think this is a great card. I haven't seen it just running away. I went up against a Highlander priest that had this in the deck. Seemed to totally work, even though... so that.
Yeah, Highlanders are doing some dragony things, yeah. But it's not like the lots and lots of dragons, like super dragon priests. Like, oh man, what was it? That was like, I feel like Dragon Priest was even like pre-Spiteful Priest, like... when was that? It would have been like, what, 2016, 2017-ish?
It was whenever.
Like, I feel like it's been a long time.
Whenever they first put out the Heroic Tavern Brawl, because I did my best run with the very first time they had a Heroic Tavern Brawl with a Dragon Priest.
Mm. So yeah, whenever that was.
Yeah.
Totally can't remember.
Yeah. No, I think it's good, even though I can't find much in the way of actual statistics 24 hours into this. I think some folks are messing around with this in their Dragon Priest decks. So let's move on to Skyveteer in Rogue, because Team 5 can just not stop making up names. And I'm okay with it.
Yeah, I'm glad that you said that one out loud, because I don't know. I couldn't, reading it in the notes, I could not wrap my brain around the name of this card.
I mean, if you want to call it Skiveteer, go for it. But that sounds like something you would catch.
I was thinking like Skiv, like Skivvies, like back to the underwear conversation.
What are Skivvies?
Okay, chat room, back me up here. Please tell me that I'm not the only one who's ever heard the term skivvies for like your underwear.
Is that a Canadian thing?
I don't, maybe it's a British thing. I don't know.
All right. Well, anyway, Skyvatyr is a 2-mana 1/3 common rogue pirate with stealth and death rattle. Draw a card. I have seen this popping up in Galakrond Rogue, and in fact, you don't even have to dig that hard. This one actually does pop up on Aegis Replay. You can find a Galakrond Rogue with not that many games played, but still games played nonetheless.
I don't think there's going to be any games played really high with these new cards, right? Because they've only been out literally 24 hours.
yeah, absolutely. So this version drops SI7 and Life Drinker and puts in Skyvatyr and Faceless Corruptors. So giving up a little bit of board control on the SI7, but you're picking up with the Faceless Corruptor, although it's happening later in the game, but potentially significantly more board control because it's a Faceless Corruptor. And then it's not really gaining any type of like damage heal through like what Life Drinker was done. And then there's just a Skyvatyr in there or two of them. So what I think it's in here because Galakrond Rogues are running Praise Galakrond and they're running Lackey Generation. This is my best estimation at this point as to why we're seeing Skyvatyr in this deck, because this is a fantastic target for +1 attack. Because when I first saw this card, I'm like, why do I care about this having stealth? It has one attack. What the hell is it going to do? but Praise Galakrond, yeah, it's only +1 attack, but you're also invoking when you do it. And here you go. Here's a 1/3 body to actually put some attack onto. And then obviously you've also got your +1 attack rusher. The Goblin Lackey.
Yeah.
Yeah. So if you're running lackeys, you know, if you're looking for a plus attack targets, you could definitely do worse, I think, than Skyvatyr. So,
yeah, I mean, the 3 health means it's probably going to survive against stuff, which I mean, I feel like. In this case, the death rattle of drawing a card is just kind of like a bonus. I feel like if you're going to be playing it in this Galakrond Rogue deck, what you're probably trying to do is, like you say, control the board. I think you can kind of see that from adding in the Faceless Corruptors. Like the thing that you want to do is to be controlling the board and then kind of swinging for face when you've held on to that advantage. So I can see how they would kind of throw those two in a deck together. And I think in that deck, you're not necessarily trying to draw your whole deck all the time. You're more so just like, oh, death rattle, it finally drew a card, cool. But what you wanted to do is, you know, stick around to be able to get those attacks in, and the more you can get out of those buffs, the better. So I think the drawing a card is like a bonus, but probably the stealth and the 3 health is like more important for what you want to do with all of the lackey generation.
Yeah. Let's move right along to Shaman, who got 2 cards added this week. First being a new legendary weapon, the Fist of Rodden. It's a 4-mana 1/4 durability legendary Shaman weapon that reads, after you cast a spell, summon a legendary minion of that cost. Lose 1 durability.
Yeah, so this is one I think we actually talked about before the adventure launched, because I remember this, I think, remember. Yeah, I think this is one of the ones that was kind of teased ahead of time. And I feel like, yeah, it was a few weeks ago now that we talked about it. But I feel like it's one of those things where
it was 348. No, we didn't. OK, I'm not crazy.
Oh, OK.
That was, Amazing Reno, Chaos Gazer, Shopbot and Dark Prophecy.
I was like, I definitely remember it because I remember having I found this super awesome on HearthstoneDecks.net. They have an article that shows you literally every single card that shows up in each mana slot and what spell you have to cast to get what legendary minions. And yeah, I mean, it's the kind of thing where it has a pool and it's targeted. So the pools are relatively small because they're split up by mana cost. It's not a random legendary minion. So this article is, and I'll put a link in the show notes. It's awesome. It's again at HearthstoneDecks.net. And they even broke down like average stats of like at 1 mana, what are you going to get? And so at 1 mana, you get on average a 1/1. 2 mana, you get 1.8 attack, 2.6 health. Like, so it kind of breaks down what the best like pairings might be. It's a great article. And yeah, I still don't necessarily think this is good.
I think it could. I don't see a universe where you use this outside of a Highlander deck.
Yeah.
I think this, I
feel like that's like the caveat. We always have these caveats when we talk about cards in these big groups. And I feel like Highlander, just is the thing for this set of cards. Cause it's like, they're pretty good. Like they're kind of okay. They're fair. And those kind of cards are usually the ones that fill out some of those last few spots in a Highlander deck.
Right. Well,
because they just Highlander decks have room.
Yeah. I don't like, again, this is, so if Arcane Amplifier if Rising Winds is like a card that I think is fine and just leans over into being useful for one archetype, I think Fist of Rodden might be the same. I think it's fine, and I think it just ever so slightly leans over into actually finding a home in Highlander lists. Because, I mean, it's definitely not an aggressive card. Like, you don't want to pay four mana and just, like, this is what happens for your four mana. But I don't know. I think this is interesting. Elvix in the chat room. I mean, it was a Spiteful-esque for sure.
It's definitely giving me Spiteful feels for sure.
Yeah. This is one of the ones I need time to play with and like see it in action, see what the roles actually are. But I think in a deck that has the ability to go long and go for a value over turns game plan, which is kind of, basically what happens in Highlander lists, I think this could totally work for Shaman.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, particularly in the four mana slot, which, I mean, the four mana Shaman spell, you've got Hex, right? And Hex, especially if you're looking at this from maybe even like a control perspective, I don't even know if there's a control Shaman out there, but I feel like this would probably fit well, is a place where you can put a couple of Hexes in. The four mana legendary minions are actually pretty good. They have a lot of effects that aren't necessarily like battle cries. They're, pretty beefy in terms of stats. So I think that this would actually, casting a Hex and running a control type variant with this card might actually be really good. The five mana slot isn't too terrible either. And you've got, Hagatha's Scheme is another kind of control-y kind of a card. I think there's definitely something here. Even six manas with like Reign of Toads, again, a very like defensive type of a card, gives you some really, really good, well-statted, good effect options. It's not really till you start getting into the super high like mana costs where things start to get a little bit wonky. There are no nine mana spells, which I think is why this is the sort of thing that didn't end up being a neutral, ended up in Shaman. There's no nine mana spells in Shaman, so you can't consistently get like Dragons and King Crush and, all these other kind of unfair swingy turns. So,
yeah. I'm surprised I'm going to bat for this card as much as I am, but I don't think there's something potentially there. Yeah. I
need to wait till rotation.
I wasn't really thinking about Spiteful ahead of time, but I wonder if that was subliminally why I was feeling a little positive towards this card. Cause typically, I don't love random effects, but this one, if nothing else, is really interesting because it's randomness within a range and you have control over what that range is by the mana cost of what you are casting to a certain degree. Obviously that's like in a perfect world. Most of the time, that's how much mana you have. That's a spell in your hand. You need to make something happen. Who gives a crap? Let's go. But
yeah,
it's still a fascinating card. So, but let's talk about the second Shaman card that was added this week, which is Explosive Evolution. It's a two mana common Shaman spell. Saying common Shaman, it's a wonderful little rhyme, makes me want to rap. But it reads, transform a minion into a random one that costs three more. I could move through this one pretty quickly if you have nothing else to add, Justin. My thought is this is potentially powerful, but Mutate really gets its strength from the fact that it's zero freaking mana. You can fit in anywhere.
You can basically like play a powerful card and then, with a high mana cost or with, like the, I'm totally blanking on it now, but the Mogu dude, Mogu Flesh Shaper, that had the reduced mana cost that you could, play for really cheap and then also, evolve it into something huge. Like the reason you could do that was because Mutate was free. So I think that it's good because it has a mana cost. So you can't kind of make really broken combo type things like that, or at least if there are really broken combo things, then, you're waiting till a little bit later. Like you're still paying for the random, but I feel like two mana for a three mana jump, and that three mana jump being totally within that random pool of minions. Like, yeah, I think this is, again, fair, versus mutate that has the potential at zero mana to just get stupid broken.
Right, right. Yeah. That, again, Rising Winds and Fist of Raiden are like fair and like lean over into finding the way into homes, which I'm fairly certain they will. Explosive Evolution, I think, is the opposite. I think it's fair and it just leans away from finding its way. It always has a chance. Who knows? Like if Shaman gets some really weird discount cards or like higher cost than they should be. I don't know. There's something. There's always a chance.
There's maybe something here. Abused, yeah.
But right now I just don't see it.
Yeah.
And I could be wrong. I don't know. Fiendish Servant is next. This is the last class card we're going to talk about today because the last class card that was added this week for Warlock. It's not just for Battlegrounds. Constructor gets to play with it too. It's 1 mana, 2/1 common Warlock Demon with a death rattle that we should all be very familiar with by now. Give this minion's attack to a random friendly minion. Hello, Zoo. Are you there? Yes. Yes. You should hear this.
Yeah, I've already seen this being played. It got like insta slotted into Zoo.
Makes so much sense, right? I mean, like we love it in Battlegrounds, right? And this is definitely a hell of a lot easier to play around when you can choose where you attack and what you kill and what order you kill it in.
Yes.
But that's also against Zoo, and you tend to be down an attack or three sometimes against their board, and you may not have the perfect choices. So, makes sense for Zoo. It seems to be making sense for Zoo in the short amount of time I've had to play with this card.
Already,
And constructed. So, yeah, makes a lot of sense. I like you, Fiendish Servant. I like you quite a bit. And then we have one neutral to talk about today, and it's Hailbringer. It's a 5 mana, 3/4 common neutral elemental with a battle cry that reads, summon 2/1/1 ice shards that freeze. Those shards do not have rush. This is a pretty neutral card.
Yeah, it definitely is. I feel like if they were rushing, they would be amazing and probably way too strong. So, yeah. But if you could basically like play a 3/4 onto the board and freeze two characters, like whether that was minions or face or whatever, I guess they'd have to have charge to hit face. But you could just freeze two other minions and put a 3/4 on board. That seems really good and probably way too good. So,
I need something else to go along with this. It's the kind of thing where I'm like, this is cool. Like anytime where I get one card that goes wide, like by itself, I get interested, but this card by itself doesn't do enough. And there's not really a lot of support in Elemental right now to really piggyback off of this and do something cool with the fact that you're adding 2/1/1s onto the board, because by itself, with 5 mana, like most classes have a way to deal with that. Like those 1/1s aren't going to do jack.
Yeah.
You need some way to either empower those 1/1s. You need some way to like buff your elementals in a meaningful
fashion. Which Shaman does have, with elemental evocation, maybe the thing that gives it 2/2 and draw and thing. If you give it to an elemental or elemental
now as well,
might. Oh, and chat room is going to know.
Chat room will save us at some point.
The 2 mana spell, the 2/2 with the extra effect with the elemental. You guys know what I mean. That one.
But that's, again, not enough. It's just buffing them in one turn. You need extra mana to do that on top of this.
You're getting into a space where you've got to play a 5 mana minion on top of a 2 mana spell and on and on and on. So,
That card exists. That is not the support I'm saying it needs because I don't think it's good enough, but... interesting card. I don't think quite good enough to find a home right now. We'll see down the road.
But so. I mean, we'll see this weekend. I think this weekend's going to be the big test, right? Because Arlington gets to play with all of these cards. So I'm looking forward to seeing if anything kind of comes out of left field that we're not expecting that makes use of these new cards in some weird and wonderful ways. We'll have to see what happens. But I think if there's anything to be found, then the Grandmasters in Arlington are going to find it. So I look forward to it.
I did.
Earthen
too.
Might, not elemental might. Earthen might. Earthen thank might. You. Finally, thank you. Thank you, chat room.
Had to look it up. Apparently, we weren't the only ones who forgot what the hell it was called. So, and before we move into Battlegrounds talk this week, I have one more thing I wanted to make mention of, which is Embiggen Druid. Last week, we talked about the cards that ratted and we talked about Winged Guardian, and I didn't see it. Neither did you. We were both saying all we can think about is what Druid's doing right now and doing successfully. And Wind Guardian doesn't seem to make sense in a lot of those. However,
because Imbigan didn't come out of nowhere. There were people trying to make it work. However, they had a negative win rate.
It wasn't working.
50%. Yeah, it wasn't working. Yeah, it was below 50% win rate before this, before Winged Guardian actually came out. So yeah, I didn't realize that this was going to make the, or push that deck over the edge.
Big time. It is now the winningest deck on HS Replay.
Yeah.
And this is now the most popular Druid archetype, according to HS Replay. It's just running away. I went on a tear with this deck. Didn't play a single game with it, was completely unfamiliar with it. And I'm like, well, I'm pretty sure you just draw and big in and hope for the best. And yes, that's basically what happens.
Especially if you can tie your Imbigan alongside your Dragon's Breath or Emerald Breath or whatever it is that gives you extra mana. Like if you can ramp while also Imbiganing, it's just like, yeah, it's over.
Yeah, man. And for the audio listeners at home, if you don't remember what the hell Imbigan even is, because I didn't, it's zero mana Druid spell that gives all minions in your deck +2/+2. They cost one more, up to a maximum of 10 mana. You cannot make them unplayable. Normally, I would have said thank God, but this deck is strong enough that maybe that would be okay if it did make some cards unplayable. Although there's no cards in this deck that would become unplayable.
Yeah, there's no cards in this deck that would actually become unplayable because it does top out at Winged Guardian at 7 mana. So even at, you know, double Imbigan, those things cost 9.
Yeah. Yeah, this deck is extremely strong, and Winged Guardian is supremely strong in it because it plays Witching Hour, and this is the only beast in the deck. You know what card this deck definitely isn't going to play? It's definitely not going to play Rising Winds because it does not want to bring back a 3/2 when it could bring back a 6/8 with Reborn and Taunt.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like once you get one of those things down and dead, it's just disgusting. It's like nothing is ever going to make it through again.
Yeah. Yeah. I played against a Handlock who ran out of removal.
Wow.
I was flabbergasted. I was like, oh, this is kind of annoying. He removed that. Okay, that's gone as well. Oh, they got rid of that threat. Oh, they have cards in hand. They're not playing those cards in their hand. Oh, they conceded. Okay. All right. I guess it's kind of crazy. It's kind of crazy. I am, again, also not the biggest. You know me. I'm mostly like, I like my Paladin. I like my Warlock. I like my Hunter. Everyone else kind of falls to the wayside for me. Not haven't played a lot of Druid in my time. Boy, just going off with this one, just totally going off. So, not blowing anyone's mind here. If you've been on ladder, you've definitely run into this.
I did like Taunt Druid with Hadronox and Witching Hour and stuff back when that was a thing. I feel like that was like about a year ago now. I really did like that. I feel like this is like sort of a similar feel. Basically, it's just ramping into big things, and I like that style of Druid play. I've never been a fan of token, and token just seems to be the way that people had been playing Druid, whether you were doing treant stuff or just normal token things. That had been the kind of Druid hotness. There was the Quest Druid, which was super fun, like I mentioned earlier on when we were talking about Rising Winds, that I do really also enjoy the Quest Druid. But yeah, I like these kind of Druid decks that don't involve, you know, flooding the board and Savage Roaring and, you know, being super sticky. It's just not my jam. So yeah, I like that Impig Endurance is the thing, and I've been playing a little bit of it too, and it's fun. I like these Druid play styles, so
yeah,
I'm happy that this worked.
Yeah, I like it too. It's pretty strong right now. I would like it to not get nerfed because I think it's kind of cool, even though it's kind of simple. And maybe one day we'll have a slow enough Hearthstone week that I can finally go off on my, how did so many Kel'Seth-esque effects make it through in this expansion after I was pretty sure they learned their lesson, but today is not that day, Jocelyn.
That's true. I know. I'm sorry. I was about to like agree with you and start down that tangent, but you know, we'll save it for a different day. Maybe once the adventure is out completely, we can have the conversation as a wrap up of Year of the Dragon. Cause I do agree with you. There seems to be quite a lot of draw it and win and don't draw it and lose type mechanics that have come out lately. So yeah.
Yeah,
that's a conversation for another glorious angry chicken.
Indeed. But we have one more sponsor to thank today before we move into Battlegrounds. And that is, it's a new one, Jocelyn.
Yay.
I have a question for you, Joss. How often do you think about your socks? I would imagine not very.
Well, actually, kind of all of the time. And I know, Garrett, I see your face, but I currently work in our like unfinished, half renovated basement, which includes a cement floor. So I am constantly thinking about my feet, how cold they are, and how I can fix that.
I guess that makes sense, actually. I guess, you know, being a Floridian, maybe I didn't think about my socks as much, but I'm thinking about them a lot now, Jocelyn. And that's because of our new sponsor, Bombas Socks. You can go check them out over at bombas.com/TAC. That's bombas.com/TAC. They are the most comfortable socks in the history of feet. They're so soft. They're made from a really soft natural cotton, and every pair comes with arch support, which is something I was not. That's some kind of like insane technology I did not know you could put in a sock. Also, a seamless toe. Yeah, I thought
that was a shoe thing, but that's awesome.
Yeah, and I love wearing horrible shoes for my feet, so it helps that there's arch support in my socks, since it's definitely not in my trendy ass sneakers. They've also got a seamless toe. Again, didn't know that was a thing. Apparently, it is. It's way better. Not getting that weird rub. You ever get the seam where it goes right underneath your big toenail?
Yes.
And you're just like, oh, this is the worst feeling in the world. I hate it. It's like wet plastic. It's like on the same level. Can't stand it. So super, supremely comfortable. They have like, and also every color, pattern, length, style imaginable. I learned about sock styles that I didn't know existed when I went to their website and checked out Bombas Socks. So go check them out. Like if you're at the office, if you're at the gym, if you're out on the town, they've got socks that can fit any style you're going for. And for every Bombas purchase you make, Bombas donates a pair to someone in need. So go check them out.
Which is awesome.
Yeah. I have a ton of dress socks from them, actually. And dress shoes also not known for their comfort. The arch support really helps there. So go check them out. Buy your Bombas at bombas.com/tack today and get 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/TAC for 20% off. We thank them for their support. And now let's get to Battlegrounds.
Have a good battle, friend.
Well, if we've had a week with some of the cards from Galakrond's Awakening, we've also had a week with a rather sizable Battlegrounds patch, Jocelyn. And
yeah, we did.
And I...
Mantyrion?
Joss, I was feeling really good last week. I felt like a boss. I understood everything I needed to understand about Battlegrounds. And then this patch hit. And I'm doing okay, actually. I think I had a bit of a breakthrough the last 2 days, but I have gone nowhere in my rating. I have gone down and back up and down again and then back up. And but I'm really enjoying it. Like it feels surprisingly different. I've kind of, you know, after the show last week, I was talking to some more friends, you know, about Battlegrounds and about the changes. And I was like, I don't think that much changed. You know, I don't think they made that big of an impact. There's still a demon at one, even though they took a demon away. And yeah, in most cases, I think I'd rather have the Voidwalker to trade with tokens that early in the game. But whatever. Doesn't matter. Still got a demon. You can still do demon things. But, man, like, it has really changed, Joss. I mean, you could still go demons. You could still do demon things. That being said, the demons work out slightly different now. I think because of the new tier 2 demon dropping that imp, you're a lot more kind of tempted and also more likely capable to go the ping demon build with your jugglers as opposed to just big demons.
Oh god, I have been so wrecked by those freaking pings on jugglers. Like, they do so much work. I can never seem to get the jugglers in my actual drafts, but you know.
Yeah, I that did a lot, luck. I think, because you get that and you're just like, oh, well, I'm getting an extra minion. Why not pick up that soul juggler instead of just chasing the biggest possible demons I can? Or if you don't get the big demon dream, there's one more little tool that helps you out to make that that ping demon comp work. So, and on top of that, the one the one star, the new one star is one health when it starts, and it just dies. Like it's going to, die is what's going to happen there. So things have really changed. And also with Tyrion and Milhouse, they have essentially released into the game the best hero in the game and the worst hero in the game.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy how polarized these two are.
Yes. Tyrion, I think, is busted. Like, straight up. I think Tyrion is a broken hero. The most we've seen since Bran and Amalgam was, and specifically Amalgam was still in the game when Bran was here. Like, Bran left and so did Amalgam. And I was kind of like, let's bring Bran back. Let's see how he actually works without Amalgam now. But that hasn't happened. So we don't know. But I really thought Bran was pretty busted back in the day. Which is hilarious because this hasn't been out that long and I'm using a phrase. I'm using back in the day. Right. But Tyrion is insane. Absolutely crazy. Yeah.
Tyrion with the right draft is definitely crazy. I've had him totally brick because I've basically not been able to use his hero power because every single thing that I've been offered has had a tribe on it. And so it basically like turns off his ability to do anything. But then I've gone up against Tyrions that have just been nuts. Like, I'm talking not losing any health and being the last hero standing type amazingness.
Yeah.
It's just nuts. Like, they can, if you get the proper kind of like divine shield, like Bolvar, topping out at Bolvar type build, it's just crazy. Like, if you can actually get those 1/1s with the divine shield, the righteous protectors that we were talking about. Was it last week or the week before? I can't remember. Anyways, doesn't matter. When Tyrion was announced, we were talking about the Righteous Protectors. And if you can actually get those early on, oh man, they're so good with Tyrion. They just go crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. They're nuts. And yeah, I mean, you described the worst case scenario, which is you keep finding tribes. And
honestly, I have the worst case battleground scenario. That just is me all the time.
It can feel like that.
Terrible, terrible, terrible drafts.
Yeah. I had the worst losing streak since it first came out, late last week. I think I bottom fived like five below five games in a row.
Oof.
I haven't had that happen in forever. But some of it was definitely rotten luck. A couple of them, because I started petting my cat and got distracted. But most of them were totally rotten luck. Damn cat comes in here all the time. And he's adorable, and I just want to rub his belly. But yeah, I had some truly, truly awful drafts. So it can certainly happen. But the thing is that in most cases, you need to compound that bad luck to, I think, have a truly horrible run with Tyrion. Mm-hmm. You need to never find any neutrals that you can buff up in the early game, and then also go against strong opponents that are finding early game value out of their heroes, right? Because they were going to lose to them horribly. Because in most games, if you're having average max drops, if you're bouncing around, which, by the way, we didn't mention this, and it's not in the notes because I've been running around all evening, and they just flipped the switch on this. They actually pushed live the change that does not allow you to fight the same player more than once every 3 rounds.
Oh, did
As
they?
Of
oh,
that's today, like late today.
Man, that's so good because when I was playing this, I played quite a few rounds yesterday, and oh man, I was getting so frustrated because I was going up against like the same people over and over and over again. It's like I'd go against the first place person and then I'd go against somebody else and then that same person again and then somebody else and the same person again. And I'm like, he's only first because he keeps getting me and he's got like the perfect counter to what I'm doing. Like, why is this happening? And so I'm so glad. I think this is probably one of the best changes that they've implemented in Battlegrounds so far is the, you know, opponent protection, opponent bad luck protection. Like, I don't even know what you want to call it, but matchup protection. Yeah.
Yeah. I just, whatever the case is. Yeah. That's where I think you could obviously go the worst with Tyrion, but, cause you know, if worst case scenario, like draft tribes as best you can to just not die. Mm-hmm. Because if you make it to the mid game, your opponents do the work for you. They start drafting all of the tribes away and you're just showered in neutrals. It's there's no one else wants what you're drafting. It's bust. It feels so overpowered to me. Like I find it a little nutty. Mm-hmm. I also loved the design of the hero so much. I love how much he's just like F the meta. I am my own meta. Like, what? Oh, you're all playing Battlegrounds? I'm over here playing Tyrion Fordring. That's the game I'm playing.
Yeah.
Because of just how insane it is. So, like, Wrathweaver, like, that's it in the early game. Like, right, that's the neutral that you're probably not going to get, but whatever.
Like, yeah, that was, like, the only neutral I was offered. So I was like, okay, maybe I just try to get a couple of these and then also throw some demons in there and maybe I can pivot later. And yeah, never got the chance to pivot. So
yeah, yeah. Also, just beware turn or tier two, because you've got Spawn of Azoth, and that's it as far as neutrals. At two. Now that's a damn good tier two minion to get. Although if you're buffing it, it's not going to die, and then it's not going to buff your board.
And then what's the point of that?
Tyrion's mileage is not particularly great with Spawn of Azoth.
He doesn't feel like an early game kind of hero. I mean, you definitely, like I've already mentioned a few times now, Righteous Protector. But outside of that, like, you kind of want to get out of that, those first few tiers as fast as you can to try to get ahead and find those things, unless you are able to, like, grab some triples that help you push over that gap before you can actually afford to buy up your tiers. But he's cool. I wish I got offered him a little bit more often. I think I've only actually had a chance to play him three times, which probably is more than Garrett, because I don't think you've... have you seen him once or twice?
Still no.
Still haven't played it.
And I played
a ton
of Battlegrounds. I still haven't seen him.
Oh, Garrett, I feel so bad for you.
I only had Milhouse offered to me twice, and I didn't take him the second time. But yeah, I haven't gotten Tyrion. I'm a little salty about it. I'm a little salty about it. But yeah, no, his early game is binary. You find Righteous Protector, this is the easiest game of Battlegrounds you're going to play. If you don't find it, you're in for a weird, challenging game.
Yeah.
But you're going to find Righteous Protector.
You're going to have a bad time.
Yeah, exactly. Eventually. But if you find Righteous Protector on turn one, if you get, if you get that double Righteous Protector draft, which any other hero, you're just like, oh, come on, Battlegrounds. Why do you hate me? You find it on Tyrion. You're just like, oh, cool. Thanks for the win. Good. Just moving on. It's not that ridiculous, but it certainly feels that way.
It feels like it sometimes. Yeah.
But yeah, yeah. HS Replay tweeted out top Battleground heroes that ran from January 14th when this patch hit through January 20th a couple days ago, and Tyrion is at the top. We were talking to our buddies over at HS Replay today, and they got us all of the stats and confirmed that yes, indeed, Milhouse is in 30th place, the last place of all the heroes currently playable in Battlegrounds. Are there really 30 heroes playable? Or was that also including some that were removed because of the way stats work? There's 30 total?
No, I think, right now there's 30. Yeah.
That is wild. But yeah, bottoming out.
They did this.
Bottom out.
I have definitely noticed that having the extra heroes on top of everything that people can pick means that you don't always get the same heroes offered and you don't see a lot of the same lobbies. So I've actually seen a lot more variation in my lobbies. You know, I've seen some Putrescides, I've seen some Draxuses, it's been much more varied and I've enjoyed it quite a lot. I mean, obviously you do see like Tyrion's, Rafam's and Yogg's basically all of the time. I find anyone who sees those is picking them. So yeah, I almost always see those three, but
yeah.
Other than that, it seems to be shaking things up having those six extra, you know, heroes every draft.
I've had games without Rafam in them, and that is the highest compliment I can pay the team right now. Like, thank you for going over on the hero limit, because now I'm actually having games without Rafam. I'm having games without.
I've had
Yogg.
Games without AFK. Oh man. It's so nice.
somebody here gets AFK on three a lot on their matchup.
Every once in a while.
You sound a little personally accosted.
She definitely attacks me on her third turn every freaking time. So, and she's also one that I keep running into every other round. So, yeah, lots of very good changes to keep me away from AFK. And I loved her, chat room. I loved her. I love playing her. I hate facing her.
Maybe it's not 30, because bottoming out the end, like the lowest heroes in 25th place is Gallywick's, 26th is George, 27 is Putrescide, 28 is Draxus, 29 is Finley, who's not in right now, and 30 is Milhouse.
So maybe we're at 28. We're definitely over the kind of 24 where we were for quite a while.
Yeah, they don't. They're not numbered on the actual website, which is what I always look at for Heroes. Mm-hmm. So, and I'm not going to sit here and count them on air because I didn't do it before the show.
But that would be such great radio, Garrett.
So I didn't think we were going to get into this conversation about how many heroes there were, and I wasn't prepared. Yeah, there, sorry. There, save
sorry,
your emails.
Sorry.
Milhouse, I think, is a little I think he's slightly artificially lower. Like, I don't think Milhouse is great. I don't think he's the worst hero.
I don't think we've figured out how to play him yet. Right. I feel like he comes with his whole own economy, right? And you have to think about him differently and you have to play him differently. And I don't think we've really figured out how that looks yet. So, and I don't know if you can execute the perfect Milhouse strategy with seven other players doing their own thing too, right? So I'm not convinced he's the worst. I'm with you there.
Yeah, he's definitely not the best.
I don't think he's 30 worthy.
Yeah, I would assume a lot of us are just rolling too much. Because the reason Milhouse kind of sucks is his roll cost too.
Yeah, and I think you kind of need to think about Milhouse more along the lines of a Yogg or a Rat King, where, you know, you're not necessarily trying to re-roll and look for triples all the time, or, you know, trying to build a very, very specific comp in a very specific tribe. I think the key to Milhouse might be playing with that Yogg type random effect and just being okay, whatever I'm handed to me, this is just the pool of minions that I play with. And they may not be the best, but I can get a whole bunch of them and maybe do some cool things that other people can't, because I can buy multiple minions in this turn where other people are stuck. So I think we're just not thinking about him right yet.
Yeah. Yeah. You need to get, I think, a little luckier than average with Milhouse, but there are strengths to this weirdness if you play him, if you get out of the rolling mindset. If you stop thinking about this game as a game where you have to roll to find things because you're trying to execute a very specific strategy. Once you get away from that, you're a lot more likely to get significantly more triples with Milhouse, mm-hmm. because you're just going to be rolling with the punches. So you're going to get triples for minions you would have never in a million years chased triples for. So you're going to end up discovering cards from a next tier higher, probably a little more often than on average with a hero like Milhouse, if you aren't rolling with him constantly. Because if you're rolling with him constantly, you're just going to run out of gold.
Mm-hmm.
But Volduin in the chat room, I'm with them entirely, saying buy a lot, sell a lot of minions. That is Milhouse. They're not as sacred because they cost one less gold. Buy them.
Mm-hmm.
This is also a hero where you're going to keep some in your hand because you're out of board space relatively quickly. And then on the following turn, think of it as like a Basiel. Now you've got a bunch of gold in a bank, essentially. And so you can buy even more minions. And then once you start assembling some strong pieces, then you can roll a few times because you probably have a little bit of an extra economy over everyone else because of what you're holding in your hand, because you've overbought, because you can. There's some interesting things here.
Just the fact that when you sell your minion and you get one gold, that now represents half a minion instead of a third of a minion. That's a big change to the economy of the game. I think there's something there. I think that there's a way to play him properly. And I think that he can be good, or at least medium. I don't think he's Tyrion, but I also don't think he's Finley.
Yes. And if we're doing the ABCD, I don't think he's B, he's probably C, but I don't think he's, I think he could potentially be C. Right now, I would really, really take a strong stance and say he's high D instead of low D. But I think he could ascend to C. I think we just need to spend more time. Jocelyn, I haven't wanted to actually log into an extra Hearthstone account in a very long time. But because of Milhouse, I want to spin up one of my my EU account or something and just pick Milhouse every time he's offered, because I just want to figure this hero out.
Rank doesn't matter. Yeah.
I just want more experience, and I don't want to feel afraid to pick Milhouse. Or I should just stream more, because stream will just bully me into picking him every single time.
Honestly, I still don't get ladder anxiety in Battlegrounds. It's great. I don't know if I'm having so much fun or if it's the incremental, changes and not the you get a star or you lose a star, discreteness of the rank and standard. But man, my ladder anxiety, not there.
Honestly,
it's so much fun. Although, I mean, I'm only just over 5,000, so.
We're nearing the end of the show now, so I would like to get a little Battlegrounds adjacent and kind of talk about Battlegrounds from like a social aspect. I love that when I talk to my friends about Battlegrounds, we are talking about the exact same experience. It's not, oh, you don't play Paladin? What do you play? Oh, you play Warrior. Okay, well, I really do. Like, we can't have shared experiences because we go up against each other's, you know, favorite classes and favorite decks or whatever it happened to be piloting at the time. But the fact that within the Hearthstone community, as you're talking about Battlegrounds, we're all having the same conversation about the same damn thing because we're playing basically the exact same game with a much smaller pool of cards compared to something like Constructed Hearthstone. And there's just...
Or Wild. Jeez.
Yeah. And it's... I'm just not used to it. And it's really fun. And it has really opened the door to like this. This is Hearthstone has gotten really antisocial for me over the years. Like, I don't have a lot of friends, like personal, like real life friends that play it that much anymore. A lot of them have just gone back to like paper Magic at this point. A few of them to Magic Arena. So it's just my internet friends, and I love y'all, but I have real life friends, and that's where a lot of my conversation gets eaten up outside of podcasts. And so it's really freaking cool that like, no matter who I'm talking to, like we're talking about Battlegrounds. It's really easy to have a pretty wide ranging understanding of the game. And, at the same time, it doesn't get boring to talk about or to think about or to strategize about, at least not yet. I have yet to be bored with Battlegrounds. It has a one more game quality that hasn't hit me probably since like Hearthstone beta of just like, wow, this is just blowing my mind. I just want to keep going. Well, you know, no. Since Auto Chess, like the Dota mod, because that, I couldn't put that down. But I can get double the amount of Battlegrounds games in as it took me to play one game of Auto Chess when it first hit. So, didn't get into TFT. I can't speak to that, but man, this is, it's got its hooks in me bad, and it's not letting up. So big fan of Battlegrounds. Give me Tyrion is my end thought on our check-in on the Battlegrounds meta. I had my worst Van Cleef game this week. Ooh, it stung. That stung. You get Van Cleef.
Van Cleef is one that I still haven't actually been offered.
Wow, really?
I think I've played every other hero now. But yeah, I have never been offered Van Cleef.
All right. So you're making me realize that when Van Cleef was first added, I think it almost took me two weeks before I saw him. Mm. So maybe I'm going to get lucky because now I see Van Cleef all the time. So maybe one more week and I'll just get Tyrion maybe every four games. Cause that's how I feel as often as I run across Van Cleef. But it's wild.
It's only a matter of time, Garrett. It's only a matter of time.
It is wild out there. If anyone out there, by the way, I would love some beast drafting coaching. That's where I'm really struggling right now. I need to work on my beast drafting, and I need to work on my late game. Screw everything. I'm switching to Murlocs because I know how many token generators I need to actually make that switch happen. Those are like the two things I really need to work on. I feel like I can guarantee a top four with demons in most scenarios and mechs in most scenarios. I really need to work on my beasts. And like the late game Murloc switch. If I get the like the one big Murloc early, like you find the Coldlight Seers pretty regularly and you actually get some health, that's fine. I can Murloc all day with that. It's the late game switch that I haven't run across it enough times. I haven't actually sat down and done the research to know what I need to make that happen. That's where my brain is right now. And I love that I can make these kind of like laundry lists of like, okay, I know this is where my weakness is in this game, in a drafting game, which is wild, like because the pool is small enough that you can actually wrap your brain around it. I'm, as you can see, borderline manic about the topic of Battlegrounds. So anyways, it's great. We'll talk more about it next week. But until then, we are now at the end of the show. So thank you very much, everybody, for tuning in to this week's episode of The Angry Chicken. A reminder, for the next 2 weeks, we are still recording on Wednesday nights. If you are a fan of the live show, we're going to be doing that as long as Galakrond's Awakening is rolling out so that we can actually have a little bit of time to play with the new cards and also see if any more Battlegrounds things get like thrown in there, because I've got my eye on you, Battlegrounds. I don't trust you anymore. I just feel like you're going to throw a curveball at me at any moment. Buddy Lance, Blizzard Buddy Lance, you know who you are, Lance, tweeted at me because I was talking about some of my struggles to wrap my brain around the new Battlegrounds meta, just tweeted at me that scene from the first Incredibles where Mr. Incredible goes, "Why would they change math?" And that is exactly how I feel. It's the most perfect encapsulation of when Battlegrounds gets a patch. So some fantastic stuff. So anyways, thank you everybody for hanging out with us. Thank you for supporting us, all of our wonderful patrons. If you'd like to support this podcast, head on over to patreon.com/TAC. Again, you get perks like the access through the Discord, an ad-free feed. You can plug that feed into any catcher you want and continue getting the podcast like usual. You don't have to go anywhere special for it once you set it up. And outside of that, huge thanks to our Patreon producers, Declan H and Cheesy Bob. Thank you so much for the support, you two. I'm just going to give them a little extra special thanks because these two have been like holding down the fort for so long. They've been such long supporters and such generous supporters of the Angry Chicken. I really appreciate it, you two. Thank you so much. Hope you're doing great. The back catalog of the Angry Chicken can be found at amove.tv or our YouTube channel, youtube.com/amovetv. We're going to be splitting up the VODs. We're going to do it. We have segments already. Why not give it a shot? YouTube has never been a big audience for us. Our big audience lives in the audio only realm
world.
Yes, but really at the end of the day, it's just that like hour, 90 minute, 2 hour sometimes talking heads doesn't play well on YouTube. We were already segmented, so we figured why not upload in segments. So that's what we're gonna try. So bear with us as we give that an experiment. We've been trying doing one segment a day. Some of you want it faster. Maybe we'll try just uploading them all in one day and just seeing if that goes over well. So we're experimenting. We're gonna see how it goes. So let us know. Right into the show, tacpodcast@gmail.com if you want to be a part of the show. But around the table, before we leave, Jocelyn, where can everyone find you when you're not being the angriest of chickens?
Sorry. I love how you say around the table when there's two of us. Like
across the table.
not a lot of rounding.
I mean, two people could sit at a round table. You ever been to a cafe?
I guess so. But you're
I know you're probably not out at the cafe right now in Canada because it's probably under a snowbank, any of those little round tables, but.
Yeah. It's a thing. All right, I get you. You can follow me on Twitter and Twitch. I'm at Joss Plays. It's J-O-C-E Plays. Pretty much tweeting out anything that I'm doing, anything I'm making, which right now is mostly either for Azeroth, my World of Warcraft podcast, or The Gamers Inn, which is my general gaming podcast. We've been covering a lot more super cool news stories lately and some new and unique game experiences. Frostpunk is like my life right now. Man, I love that game. It's so good. They just put out a new expansion. So if you guys are interested in my thoughts on games other than things in the Blizzard universe, do go and check out Gamers Inn.
I'm Garrett Art on Twitter. Everything I do, this podcast included, can be found over at amove.tv. Just for shits, I noticed that theangrychicken.com was available. So we have that domain now for the first time in our 7-year history.
Yep.
Doing the show a long time. Whenever the beta started. I don't know. I'm too old now.
Well, yeah. I mean, 50 weeks in a year, 52 weeks in a year, and 7 years, we're at 350. The math mostly checks out.
Good God. Yeah. Yeah. Roughly seven-ish years of The Angry Chicken. We now have theangrychicken.com. It just takes you to our blog page on amove.tv, but nonetheless. So go check out amove.tv. I have a new WoW show myself called WoW Killer. We talk, Taliesin and I talk about a single topic, a single freaking WoW topic. We talk for 2 hours today. About our history with raids. It was just like story time. We sat there with our coffee and just were like, hey man, when did you start raiding?
Story timed it.
Yeah. Yeah. Which now I realize we should have called it Wowstalgia.
Ooh.
Wowstalgia. Not the whole show, but like when we do these types of episodes, it should be called Wowstalgia episodes. But yeah, it's a fun show.
Write that down.
I enjoy it. It's just very conversational and doesn't require depends on the week, but sometimes doesn't require much research, which I like. Sometimes. So I have to catch myself. I'm like, oh, we just did an Azoth 4 episode. Never mind. That one was like a lot of typies, but go check that out. Everything's at amove.tv. That's going to do it for this episode. Thank you all so much for hanging out. Until next time, job's done.
Job's done.
Done.
This
Heroes Network. For more information about this and other shows, visit frogpants.com. Audio program so good, it's like you're there.
Ah, gotcha. Yeah. So I'm going to start recording because I've got a quick little story time. And I figure, why not? I'll throw this on the end of the show as a little bonus.
Okay.
So, as I clear my throat, the door to the office where I record is closed. Usually I leave it open because it's hot as hell in this house, especially in Florida, especially with all these lights on. It's closed. You know, the dogs are out. Katie's home because we're recording at night now. So I open the door and come out, and I feel the need to say something because I'm sure Katie's going to be like, shouldn't you be podcasting? Why are you out? So I open the door and I go, ah, effing hamburger helper. And Katie's like, oh no. And I'm like, what? And she's like, what are you yelling about? I'm like, oh, well, it was really cheesy. And now like I'm a little phlegmy and I'm clearing my throat a lot before the show. And now I need to get a drink. And she goes, oh, I thought you had to go to the bathroom.